Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hello and welcome to the Metrospective presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70 celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. I'm Ted Berg, joined in Zoom conference by The Athletic's Mets beat writer Tim Britton. And Tim, Mike Puma of the New York Post, former guest of this show, wrote an article this week suggesting that one concern in potential turnover in the Mets front office might be owner Steve Cohen's tweeting habits. And owner Steve Cohen met this with a tweet.
You know, Ted, sometimes when someone says something critical of me, if they were to point out that, like, it, you know, if you were to say something along the lines of, like, Tim, you were very confident that this Mets team was going to make the playoffs throughout much of the summer, you were wrong, I might respond to that criticism. I have a tendency to do this sometimes by not dealing with the substance of the criticism, but really trying to ding you as the criticizer, or as the critic, I guess is the word, by saying something along the lines of, oh, I don't know, like, you went to an institution whose basketball team is no longer as good as it used to be, therefore your criticism is invalid. My institution is still okay at basketball for at least a few more years. No, I think, you know, it's interesting that Steve Cohen's response was not to deal with the substance of the criticism in that piece, which is that, you know, the Mets right now in their position don't look any better as an organization than they did on November 10th or whenever it was last year when Steve Cohen and Sandy Alderson had their first press conference and when they talked about trying to be an iconic franchise and what they wanted to do last offseason. Instead, he went after whoever Mike Puma's source is. He thought it was David Sampson. David Sampson said it wasn't him and that he would go on the record with his criticism, which I think you kind of have to buy from Sampson because he's done that.
all the time. Not just, yeah, I mean, not out to defend the guy, because generally I don't like the things he has to say, but he is, you know, it doesn't appear afraid of putting his name behind them.
And Mike also said it was not Sampson. You know, it doesn't really matter who said it at the moment.
Like, yeah.
Is the criticism fair? I think it is to an extent. I mean, I'd like, you know, it's something we can debate on a podcast. Here's the bottom line is, who can they hire? You know, who, like, the response to that story is hiring someone good. If they're in the same position they were last year and they can't hire a president of baseball ops, then it feels like the story was right, you know? And I think, you know, there are fans I've seen in comments and on Twitter kind of, why would, you know, an exec who gets worried about Steve Cohen tweeting is not someone I want running my team. The way I think about it is, if you are Billy Beane, if you're David Stearns, if you're David Forst, if you're Derek Falvey, if you're any of these guys who have a job with another team where you are essentially directing baseball operations, and you're at a team that maybe is in a smaller market, so you can't spend as much money, but you have a team that is often successful, you know, and the Mets are not trying to hire someone whose teams consistently finish in last place. You're often successful and you have built up credibility with A, your fan base, and B, the people who are above you in that organization. life's a lot less stressful. Life is a lot more fun. The job, you know, the job itself is a little bit different, but you probably enjoy everything a bit more with that kind of job security. And you don't know how it would operate with Steve Cohen. So I understand if you're an executive with another team, if you're David Stearns and you've gotten the Brewers to the playoffs 4 consecutive years, would this be? Which they've never done in the past. They've never really come close to that in the past. That you are as good an executive as they've had in a very long time, that people like you in Milwaukee, that your owner likes you in Milwaukee, that you're able to spend more money than anyone else has in Milwaukee, and you've got a nice team there, not just now, but in the future. You know, the appeal of it's not automatic that you want to go to New York the way, you know, it doesn't work kind of like I think actually we've seen it in like college basketball coaching searches. You see guys turn down bigger, more stress-filled programs because they're happy where they are and they get paid well. You know, smaller schools can pay. You know, Wichita State was paying Greg Marshall a ton of money before the unpleasantness there. Things like that. So, you know, do you want to leave that for something that is less of a known quantity? And from the outside looking in, I can see you seeing Steve Cohen criticizing his clubhouse and the offense you know, getting into it with reporters on Twitter and saying, you know what, I don't know what this guy's about, but this rubs me the wrong way. I like what I know at this spot, and I'm not going to test it out at this other spot.
Well, what kind of vacation time does it offer?
Zero vacation time ever.
Right.
You win the World Series, you go to work the next day.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just learned the hard way that you can never really take a vacation on the New York Mets. You made a lot of really good points in there, but I don't know. Like, don't you think that someone with I think it was a point you made early on, someone with that type of experience and that type of expertise necessary to even be considered for this job would know enough how to manage someone and negotiate a relationship with someone like Steve Cohen? Like, it's not going to be your first mega rich guy you need to deal with, right? And you're I don't know. Like, I could see it both ways, because on one hand, it's like, why do I want to deal with all that nonsense? And on the other, it's like, hey, this is the Mets. Like, this is a huge challenge. This is a place where, you know, sure, like 99 out of 100 times, it seems like it's going to wind up bad. Like, I think back to Willie Randolph and when he got hired being like, I know how it ends here. and you know, being very right about that. But I tend to think that if you're like Eric Neander or any of these like hotshot GM types, you have the confidence to say like, well, I don't have to worry about criticism because I know what I'm doing and my team's going to win. So like, this guy's going to be on board too.
I mean, yeah, they've all dealt, every owner is some variation of the same personality type, right? Well, not the same personality, but you know, they're part of a certain,
they're rich guys, they've all spent their whole lives making money, right? That's right.
And a lot of the, you know, including the ones in Tampa, are people who like Cohen come from the hedge fund world, so yeah, they're used to dealing with it. It's not like, can those guys handle him as their owner, would they be good at it? It's, do you want to? You know, if you're offered 2 jobs and you're doing the same thing, and one job, you know, it has a more relaxed atmosphere, and the other job pays you a little bit more, and there's maybe a better chance that more people like you, but there's also a much better chance that more people dislike you, and it's just on a day-to-day level much more stressful. You know, which job are you going to take? What is the draw of that second job? How do you pitch it to a guy? Like, there, you know, Ken Rosenthal wrote in The Athletic this morning, we're talking on Friday, about Billy Beane and Bob Melvin, you know. That's the tag team that the Mets should be looking at and trying to lure Beane over from Oakland to bring Bob Melvin to be his manager. And, you know, the case that Ken makes is pretty compelling from Bean's perspective. This is, you know, he's been in Oakland forever. It's been a quarter century, basically, that he's been the general manager there, general manager and above. They haven't won a World Series. They've done about as well as you could do without winning a World Series over that stretch of time. They're going into a period of even greater flux with their stadium. It's still going to be a while before they really experience the revenue windfall from a stadium. So this is a chance to kind of jump on. You know, Beane was famously offered the Red Sox job almost 20 years ago and turned it down. It went to Theo Epstein, I believe, that offseason.
Because his daughter wrote a song, right?
I believe that is the narrative.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is his chance to relive that and try it a different way and maybe secure his legacy in a different fashion. Like, his legacy in Oakland is relatively secure insofar as anyone's legacy is ever secure. And now he could go to New York, work with his mentor in Sandy Alderson, a guy that he told me 3 years ago that he idolizes, that he could have worked for the rest of his life. Actually, no, he said he could have worked for him for the next 10 years. So we'll see. And finish the job in a, you know, see what he could do given the chance in a bigger market. That's compelling. There's also the fact that he has an ownership stake in the A's. The A's might become, you know, because of the stadium issue, they might be worth a lot more pretty soon. And that ownership stake might be worth a lot more. So, you know, that's something he's got to weigh. But, you know, there is something appealing about the Mets. We both know it. We grew up around here and rooting for this team, that when the Mets are good, the city feels different, and there will be a different level of adulation for whoever wins a championship with the Mets than there will be in other places. And even then there is, I think, for the Yankees across town, because they do it with more consistency. So, you know, that is the pitch, like the chance to be this iconic New York brand, to be the guy who ends what is becoming a relatively long World Series drought at this point, and wins the adoration of New York fans. There's a lot of risk in that too, but don't you like that reward? And guy, you know, I say guys, it really is just men have the chance to jump at that if they want to. I don't know, again, how they weigh that against happiness, a less stressful environment on a day-to-day basis, you know, that, and I don't know what the financial component is for different people or family concerns living in different cities. There's a whole lot that goes into it that's just beyond, don't you want the challenge of running the New York Mets?
I think that's absolutely right. I'm glad you brought up Ken Rosenthal's piece, because, you know, I think that while you're right that there might be a lot influencing Billy Beane to stay in Oakland, I do think that a guy like that, and, you know, because it sounds ridiculous, and in this day and age in baseball, I think you absolutely don't need a name, right? Like, it's the maybe perhaps the next best GM in the world is most likely someone most fans haven't heard of yet. It's some up-and-comer with some new ideas who's going to be the next person to, you know, get the right job and turn a team on its head and start winning. But I think in this situation, you know, given both the market and given the looming presence of Steve Cohen and his Twitter account, I do think it seems like there might be an advantage to someone like Billy Beane. Theo Epstein is another name that's been mentioned. I don't think Theo Epstein would take the job. I think that he seemed really earnest in his desire to improve the game as a whole and do something perhaps even more important than turning a franchise around and, you know, turning the sport around. So, like, to me, it would be surprising if he left that league office role after just 1 year. But those guys, you know, I mentioned because they have so much respect and so much stature inside baseball already that it seems like they might be more apt to stand up to Steve Cohen. And it seems like Steve Cohen might be more apt to lay off a little bit if he knew that his teams were in the hands of one of these, you know, lauded, successful baseball executives who've been doing it forever.
Yeah, I mean, Epstein dealt with it in Boston with Larry Lucchino. It's the reason he stepped aside for those couple months in, I think, 2005, the leaving Fenway in a gorilla suit, I think it was. That was before my time covering baseball. And then, you know, left after 2011, in part because he just had gotten sick of dealing with Larry Lucchino. It did seem, and I might be reading too much into this from afar, it did seem like he got a little bit sick of dealing with ownership in Chicago as well over the last couple of years, you know, and he has said that he doesn't think he would stay in a job for more than 10 years anyway, and it was 10 in Boston and 9 in Chicago, I believe. So, you know, you just get tired of people regardless, maybe. But again, like, what is his appetite for dealing with an owner like this again, or a person above him that is going, that appears as if he wants to be very involved in the process again. You know, it could be, he could look at it as a challenge and I want to try this. I want to be the guy who does it. Or it could be like, you know what? I've done it already. I've done it in other places. Why do I need to do it again here? And so I'll be happier if I don't do it. I'll be happier doing something else. You know, he doesn't need this job. Billy Beane doesn't need this job. There are a lot of guys that you would think would, you know, might be candidates for, they don't need this job. And so you've got to pitch it to them in a way that really makes them want it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Another thing about Ken Rosenthal's article that I found honestly a little bit frustrating, first of all, he keeps using the refrain adults in the room. And what's frustrating about that to me is that that is exactly the phrase that I heard bandied about when the Mets hired Sandy Alderson, that he would come in to be, and it was a different, there was a different era for the team. It was, you know, under the Wilpons when they hired him for the first place. And, you know, we were told like now there are adults in the room. And so it seems strange to need additional adults when it seems like from Rosenthal's article, Alderson will still be around. And I guess my question for you is it a fait accompli that Sandy Alderson is going to be in some way or another in charge of this hiring process when it comes?
Yeah, I've heard nothing to indicate otherwise. I think it was Newsday earlier in the week that said he will absolutely be back in his role as team president. You know, the hope, I think, from the Mets' perspective, from Steve Cohen's perspective, is that you shift Sandy Alderson over more to the business side of things, the way he was kind of initially hired to be. Mm-hmm. You know, remember, they were going to hire a president of baseball ops last year. When they didn't, Sandy was like, okay, I'll be a little bit more involved in the baseball side of things. Then when Jared Porter was fired, Alderson said, well, I'm going to be a little bit more involved in the baseball side of things. And then when Zach Scott was placed on administrative leave, Sandy was like, I'm the only one involved on the baseball side of things, more or less now. But it's, you know, it's a damning recent track record for him. You look, the last manager he hired is on MLB's ineligible list, banned through next season. The last general manager he hired is on MLB's ineligible list, banned through next season. The assistant general manager he hired is currently on administrative leave for the Mets. The pitcher that he tried very hard to sign and offered the highest single-year contract in Major League history is also on administrative leave through the end of the season. That's four not very good things that he's done recently, you know, going back to the Callaway hiring a few years ago. And I think it's very reasonable to ask, why is he the one who gets any say, let alone big time say, in who the next hire is? I think from maybe Cohen's perspective, who else would make that hire? Or, you know, do you need to basically start completely fresh and have Steve Cohen at the top of the hierarchy and no one underneath him and start from there? That's kind of the situation they're in. I think there's so much flux and change in there that he doesn't want to add another layer to it by making a move with Alderson.
Yeah, and, you know, I respect everything Sandy Alderson has done in baseball. I don't think he is in any way a bad human being. But just about everything he has done in this latest tenure over the last year and a half or so has suggested that he is increasingly out of touch with the particulars of running a baseball team in 2021, which is a heck of a lot different than running a baseball team in 1986. And so, I don't know, it frustrates me. And I know, look, if you have to replace him, then it's one more step in the process. And I do think that, you know, the uncertainty around the CBA notwithstanding, it would behoove the Mets, if they're going to make a move here, to get on it, because they have a big offseason coming, and you kind of need to know the people who are going to be making the decisions like before the offseason even starts. So I'm glad that it's in the news already, especially since it seems like Steve Cohen reads the news. But it you know, it's like, oh, but is that, you know, like if you need sweeping change here, can that happen if it's still Alderson making the calls?
Yeah, I mean, you say that it's a lot different running a baseball team now than in 86. I think it's a lot different now than 2006. It's
yeah,
pretty different.
It's a lot different than it was in 2011, you know?
It's pretty different from 2011 and 2016 to run a baseball team now. And I think, you know, I wrote this back, I think, March 1st, you know, the day that that Alderson gave his first press conference of the spring and talked about, like, their pursuit of Trevor Bauer in the offseason for the first time publicly. And I wrote that it still hadn't seemed like he and the Mets front office had fully grappled with how bad January had been for them with Porter mm-hmm. and with Callaway, and that he hadn't really thought about his own role in it. And even, you know, after the Scott DWI, I believe Sandy said something along the lines of that he was personally chagrined by it. And you still...
He had a stronger
response.
There's
a part of you that wants, like, yeah, I'm personally chagrined when I go outside and it's raining and I didn't bring an umbrella. I think there are, you know, Sandy is a master of vocabulary. He knows a lot of words, and it felt like there were still stronger ones available to him in that instance.
He had a stronger response to Javi Baez and Francisco Lindor giving fans the thumbs down than he did to his GM getting. I mean, I think that's inarguable, right? Like, it seemed like a much more impassioned response to players giving a thumbs down, which was, you know, ultimately an innocuous gesture, than to his GM getting a DWI after a team function, which is definitely not innocuous.
Yeah, so it's, you know, you would like, again, I think, to feel good about where the team is trying to head organizationally, and in terms of an organizational culture, you would like there to have been more public introspection, in some level, public self-flagellation. Like, you know, it's you want people to know that you feel bad about it beyond the words that haven't come across that way necessarily over the last 8 months with it. So I think that is the part that's disappointing, and I think there is still a fairly sizable chunk of the fan base that still wants to hear that from Sandy Alderson specifically as they go on and try to reset things this offseason.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
We have a good question this week. It comes from John Carney, who is writing to us, tweeting to me from Manchester, Manchester, UK. One of our legions of European listeners. He wants to know, which work of literature do you think best describes this Mets season?
You know, you did give me some nice preparation time on this. You didn't. You're not just springing this on me.
That would have been a messed up one to just hit you with on the spot.
The funny thing is, I was thinking the other night. This is not a work of literature. Please do not interpret this as me saying it's a work of literature. But after the Tuesday night game, the extra innings loss, I heard the Ed Sheeran song "Bad Habits" on the way home on the subway. And I thought, that's a song that describes the Mets pretty well. Being a Mets fan, your bad habits just lead you back to watching the Mets every night. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was the song they should start playing when they lose games. At the end, you lose and you just play that song. In terms of literature, you know, like the Book of Job comes immediately to mind. Just like, what can you go through as a fan base? And actually, I just finished a book, actually yesterday, called Storm by George Stewart. It was written in the 1940s about a storm and the impact it has on everyone across like a large swath of the Western United States. And like the almost all of the characters are nameless. The storm is the central character. And it's just like this one, this one thing, like it doesn't have a personality. A storm, you know, a storm is something you can't control. This one uncontrollable thing is just rolling through the Western U.S. And here is how it just ruins so many people's lives and impacts so many people's lives. And when you asked me that question on text earlier, I was like, I think the Mets are kind of like the storm. That there's just like no matter who you are, like it affects you in some way as a Mets fan, and most of those ways have been negative lately.
So my first instinct was to say like Finnegan's Wake because it makes no sense to me whatsoever. But it never like that's a cop out answer because you could pretty much choose a James Joyce text for every baseball season because baseball never seems to make sense and neither does most of what James Joyce wrote. But I think that my answer after some reflection, not a ton, would be Anna Karenina. And I'll tell you, it's because everybody, you know, it starts out, everybody's unhappy, right? Like they make it clear that you're unhappy. Is it, you're with your old guy, your old man, and it doesn't, you're not thrilled about this. And a new guy comes to town and he's rich and, you know, you can see the issues, but it's sort of you get swept off your feet nonetheless, and you think, you know, maybe this is going to work out, even if the cracks in the seams are showing like immediately. And then sure enough, everything unravels slowly over time. Everybody remains unhappy and you're left thinking that you would like to jump in front of a train.
Spoiler alert. Have I told that story on this podcast? That
I think you may have. Yeah, I think so, that because I wanted to say like there is some, yes, I know you have, or I know that I've heard it referred to at least, because I knew that there was some situation in my head in which the ending of Anna Karenina was spoiled for someone.
Yes, it was my friend in the Russian literature program in graduate school, and someone said that to him about Anna Karenina, and he said, "You can't say spoiler alert about a book that came out in the 19th century."
My wife, who is like, she can be very funny in many ways. She is not typically someone for like punchlines. During Hamilton, in the opening musical number of Hamilton, the guy playing Burr sings, "I'm the one who shot him." And my wife turned to me and said, "Spoiler alert." And like, I was just laughing out loud in this theater for this, the most desired play that anyone had ever been to. Just giggling because I thought it was such a good line.
That is a good one. You mentioned Joyce and Finnegan's Wake. I took a class on Joyce in college where we just basically read Ulysses, because that's the only way you can read that book is in a mm-hmm. class where someone forces you to read it bit by bit. At the end of, you know, it was taught by probably my favorite professor in college. I took several classes by him. And at the end, the last class, someone asked him, you know, "Have you ever thought about teaching Finnegan's Wake?" And he goes, "You know, I think every summer I think about it, and like I open up Finnegan's Wake and I start to read it, and I start to come up with some ideas for it. And then I get to like page 30 and I'm like, screw it, I'm just going to teach Ulysses again. This is too ridiculous."
It is like completely, it's like it might as well be like decoding. Like it's not reading at that point. We should wrap up, but quickly, only because I'm reminded of it. A friend of mine took a college course in which like all of the books were the great texts. I don't know if Ulysses was involved, but books along those lines, like some of the widely considered masterpiece novels of the 19th and 20th centuries. And their final paper was, pick your least favorite of these books and tell me what's wrong with you that you couldn't like it.
I could write so many books, so many papers like that.
Yeah, like this is, I could tell you exactly why, what's wrong with me and why I don't like this. It's because I don't have patience for James Joyce. That's it.
Yeah, it is a bone of contention between my wife and me I tolerated Ulysses and she did not when she tried to read it.
Yeah, I have absolutely no patience for that. It's just write a book that I can read. Like, I don't need it to be a beach read. Like, I can get down on some literature, but like I want to be able to read the book and understand it. Is that I have a fairly high reading level. I feel like I'm a fair bar. Like, if I can't get it, then your book is simply too opaque.
Yeah, you know, it's we feel decent about ourselves intelligence enough that the book should not be that impossible.
Tim, I look forward to hearing more of your intelligence next week when we discuss the Mets more, who I didn't even say just lost 3 to the Cardinals and now look like they're pretty much toast.
Yeah, the one saving grace, if you are a Mets fan who still holds out hope for the playoffs, if you're the guy, if you're the one, they're 5.5 back of the Braves while we talk. They just need to be 3.5 back of the Braves going into that final series because Atlanta was rained out against Colorado. If the Mets are a half game back of them at the end of the season, they'll have to play that game against Colorado. So you've got, if you are the Mets, 12 games to pick up 2 games on Atlanta. That's what you've got to do. That's not impossible. So we'll have, you know, I try these days, especially on the podcast, not to completely dismiss the team's chances where they are still mathematically viable. And so, you know, hold on to that hope while you still can. The offseason is long and dark anyway.
I will dismiss their chances, but be so happy to be wrong if I would be wrong.
Yes, there is still the, I don't know what the playoff odds are, but the 1%, 1.5% chance that this could work. The best scenario, obviously, is that they get to that point, they sweep Atlanta, and then Atlanta beats the Rockies and moves on.
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime you're given long odds, I think the natural move is to go check what the playoff odds were on September 17th of 2007 and be like, okay, so this is something that could really happen in reality. And I think the Mets are still in that realm of like could really happen, but I don't think it can really happen.
Yeah, I mean the hardest part is always them playing well themselves. That has, you know, every other team has come back to them basically. That if they just played decently themselves over this last, really since that Washington Labor Day series, go back to then. If they had just played the way they could have played since then, they'd be in really good shape right now. But alas, they have not, and that's why they are clinging to very low playoff odds.
Competent baseball, ever elusive. Tim, peace out.
Adios.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.